Hi everyone, this is Patu. I'm sitting here at the Indiana Linux Fest, and I'm talking to Mark, who is also known as Delta Ray in the IRC, and well, you do a lot of things, so first of all, say hi to everyone.
Hi everyone.
Thank you. So the first thing that I really wanted to talk to you about was your command line talk that you gave. It's called, I guess, Command Line Magic or something like that, and why don't you tell me how that kind of got started or what that is?
Well, Command Line Magic is a Twitter and Identica feed that I post little tips and tricks to try to encourage people to delve into the command line more than they usually do. I always felt, and I've been guilty of this too for a long time, where, you know, I tend to use the command line and I just run cd or ls and simple commands, and you look at the man page, you're like, oh, there's all this other stuff that I could do, but I don't know what to do with it. And you always see people using for loops and while loops, but you think that it's something that's complex, and they're always using examples that are like foobar,
yeah.
You know, and you don't know how to apply it to your daily life. So what I wanted to do was post real things that I'm doing, like system administration type tasks, because that's what I do in my life. I say I'm a system administrator 48/7 because I'm a system administrator at a company called Cook Medical, and then at night I run a web hosting company, so I'm on call two times over.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's pretty interesting, the situations I run into as far as responsibility goes. So whenever I come across something that I'm doing that I think is interesting, I try and generify it a little bit and then post it to the feed with a short description. And, you know, since Twitter and Identica are limited to 140 characters, I have to sometimes come up with creative ways of making it all fit or filter out some stuff.
Yeah. It's really cool, actually, that you can come up with commands that are as cool as the ones that you're coming up with and useful that are only 140 characters. So I'm curious, I mean, does anyone even use the command line anymore? I mean, come on, we've got fancy, pretty GUIs now. What do we need it for?
Well, that's one of the things I actually start out my talk with, is to talk about why the command line is still relevant in 2011, 2010. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. I've given this talk at OLF and now Indiana Linux Fest, and it's funny how, you know, I start building up my presentation, you know, preparing it and so on, and these things start popping up in the environment, like before OLF, the VMware just added a command line interface for ESX, and you know, people were talking about PowerShell and Windows and how it was catching on. And then at OLF, we actually had these Linux journal that was put in our bags that was a command line specific issue.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm just like, well, obviously there's still an interest in the command line, and it seems to be growing back because people aren't finding functionality that they need in GUI. You know, I see people on Twitter when I try and find new people to follow so that they can follow the command line feed, I search for command line, I search for bash, and I come across people who are like saying stuff like, I'm fed up with the GUI, I'm going back to the command line.
Wow, you know?
And it isn't always people who are hardcore geeks or anything, it's just people who are like, I get more out of the command line because I can do things in large batch jobs, or, you know, I don't have to worry about the interface freezing up or the interface changing or something like that. So I think it's very still relevant, and it's growing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I still find myself, sometimes I have to remind myself to do something in the GUI just so that when someone looking over my shoulder wants to know how to do something on KDE or something, I'll know how to do it, because it's like sometimes I just don't even want to be bothered with it, you know, so yeah, I think it's a really relevant thing. So your other job is, one of your other jobs is suso.org, right? What is that?
Suso.com.
Okay.
Suso.org was how it started. I started in my dorm room back in 97, and it was just some servers that would run all the time while I was sleeping, and, you know, packed as a nightlight. And I had some friends on there, and people started asking for accounts. It originally started as a place for me to host a website that I was managing called the Philip Glass Library, and I was really into Philip Glass at the time, and back when fan sites were popular.
Right.
You know, it was all the thing to do. But eventually I started to become more interested in actually managing the server, and I started learning Linux a lot more. And it just grew and grew, and I started adding new features to Suso, and learned a lot about Apache and mail servers and I also had a job at an ISP at the time, which is, so that, you know.
Yeah.
I learned from some really great guys there who worked at the university and passed along some Kool-Aid that I carry along to this day. And so CISA grew out of, you know, kind of a nonprofit type of idealism and community idealism. In 2004, we turned into .com. That was after trying to acquire the CISA.com domain from a domain squatter. My wife, she tricked the domain squatter into selling us the domain for half the price.
Nice.
So we got that, and then we formed a corporation and grew from there. I've been so busy a lot of the times that it's been hard to make CISA grow at the rate that it really should.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get sidetracked by other projects. I've been the leader of our local Linux users group, and I also started this website called Bloomingpedia, which is a city wiki for Bloomington. But at one point, it was the second largest wiki in the United States for a city, but since then, our city wikis have come along. And, you know, I get way involved with way too many things for my own good, but I always find ways to make the command line part of part of what I'm doing.
So the other thing that you're doing is that you actually helped put together this festival. So how do you feel? Because it's a basic, I mean, the final keynote's going on right now, so, you know, it's coming to a close. What's your, how are you doing?
I think it's gone very smoothly, and we've gotten lots of good feedback.
Yeah.
We had some people canceled, but I imagine that goes with every conference.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Lord D and Michael Schutte's have been involved with Ohio Linux Fest, Michael more than Matt. So, I mean, having that connection there and getting people to help us from Ohio Linux Fest was a big help in organizing the whole thing.
That's cool.
It also came about because IU Linux Fest, which is Indiana University Linux Fest, actually got started all the way back in 1998.
Oh, okay.
I actually attended that first one when I was working at Kiva Networking, the ISP I was working for. We had a table there. And so at the time, that was actually one of the first Linux Fests in the country. But it was never really pushed hard beyond, you know, the university environment and the local community. And we would only have about like 100 or 150 people every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that went until 2008, I think. So it had 10 years in existence. And then after it folded and they decided not to do it anymore, a few of us were talking about, like, oh, we'd like to have a Linux Fest. I talked with Michael at the time. He registered IndianaLinux.org. And then he kind of, I wasn't sure, you know, it was kind of unclear who was going to spearhead the whole thing.
Right.
And we really needed somebody to, like, just, you know, drive it like a train.
Yeah.
And that person was Lord D, and he just came around and just get a conference going. Right. How hard can it be?
Oh, man.
You know, now at the end of it, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea how much was involved.
Yeah.
You think it's something that's kind of easy, but then it's like all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And you have much more appreciation for conference people that volunteer and help organize it.
Yeah.
And also, you know, all the times that I wrote to a conference organizer and I didn't understand why they didn't write me back right away, I totally understand.
Well said. Well, I think, I have to agree, it came off really, really nicely. It felt like a real fest. It had lots of people. It had really great talks. I've learned a lot here. So, yeah, I mean, you guys did a really nice job. So.
One thing I'm not sure where it's happened or not. A lot of times conferences and festivals, they have something unique that is tied to that specific festival, like that becomes a tradition or something like that. And I'm wondering if anything like that has happened.
Right, yeah.
And we'll see it next year or whatever.
Yeah.
So
develops over time, I guess.
Yeah.
And actually speaking of how you had the Indiana Linux Fest here back in 98 or whatever, they were calling it. You told me about, and you actually even showed me something else that came from, I guess, Bloomington is where this CD came out of.
Oh, the
Reiterate,
yeah.
What's the story behind that again?
Okay, so, I mean, one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about at ILF was the fact that there's so much in Indiana that's tied to Linux. It's amazing that there hasn't been a festival before that, you know, I mean, there's IU Linux Fest and maybe a few other events. But there hasn't been as strong of an event. The GIMP 1.0 CD actually was shipped worldwide from Bloomington, Indiana.
That's crazy.
I actually went over to the guy's house. This was back in 1998. GIMP is such a, you know, a cornerstone of the open source desktop that it's a pretty essential, you know, it's like an artifact now. It's like a huge thing.
I didn't really realize that until you said that. I was like, oh, GIMP is GIMP, right? But then, of course, I mean, everyone knows in the back of their mind, at least, that GTK is the GIMP toolkit. I mean,
right.
Like,
And, you know, and GTK beget GNOME, and GNOME beget everything else.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, I'm sure the KDE people are listening to this and saying, hey, what the
heck? Well, I mean, you know, you can't deny that. I mean, I'm a KDE user myself, but
anybody who is using open source desktop,
they're using something GTK.
You know, they know the history with the whole Qt, you know, open and close debate and all that stuff that's going on. So looking back, there's a lot going on, and GIMP was a huge central part of that.
That's cool.
The guy who made them, he made a company called Wilberworks, and you can actually, if you search for Wilberworks on the GIMP 1.0 CD online, you'll find this story.
Oh, okay.
So Wilberworks was this company, and I don't know whether it had anything to do with Wilber, I mean, it has to do with Wilber, the icon of GIMP,
right.
But I don't know where it has anything to do with that's how Wilber came about.
Right.
You know, somebody would have to do some archaeology on that one. So anyways, he had this company called Wilberworks. It was Scott Grohing, I forget how his name is pronounced.
Sure.
But so he, when he had this company, Wilberworks, he put together this CD for GIMP with help from people on the GIMP developer team. And then it got made in Bloomington and shipped worldwide from Bloomington. So
wow,
he was announcing
really
it. I remember seeing the announcement on Flashstar or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, Bloomington, Indiana, I live there.
You know? That's crazy.
So I went over to the guy's house. He lived in northern Bloomington. And
wow. Yeah, that's really, really cool. And it was really cool to see that disc. So there's one thing. You come to the Indiana Linux Fest, you get to see old, cool stuff. And lots of great talks. I can't reiterate enough how good some of these talks were. They really did learn a lot. Thanks for talking to me.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HBR is sponsored by Caro.net. So head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.